Radio Catskill. Local news, culture, and NPR.
Live from the WJFF studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, Work Shift Live, local economic perspective from our own James B. Huntington, local author and economist, with why paying cash might cost you extra. Spotlight on SUNY Sullivan, a special event this Saturday, welcoming the new SUNY Sullivan president, Dr. David Potash. And a farewell to Albany Bureau Chief Karen DeWitt, retiring after 34 years in public radio. Her span of coverage in Albany spanned six governors and more than a dozen legislatures. We'll have a special farewell exit interview. All that's coming up. First, the news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Korva Coleman. Flood warnings are still up in the Midwest. South Dakota's governor says one person has been killed by the weather. Iowa's governor has declared states of emergency in many flooded counties. A court hearing continues today in Florida, where lawyers for Donald Trump want a federal judge to dismiss charges against the former president brought by special counsel Jack Smith. Trump's attorneys believe the law empowering Smith is unconstitutional. In this case, Smith charged Trump with dozens of counts over his handling of classified documents after leaving the White House. NPR's Dave Mistich says the judge is also hearing arguments on whether to impose a gag order on Trump over his comments about FBI agents searching his Mar-a-Lago estate in Florida.
Special Counsel Jack Smith's team objected last month after the former president falsely claimed in a fundraising email that the FBI was prepared to kill him and his family during an August 2022 search of his Florida home. Prosecutors say Trump's comments endanger the lives of FBI agents working the case. Attorneys for Trump say Smith's team has failed to show that the comments have directly put any of the agents who participated in the search in harm's way.
NPR's Dave Mistich reporting. A section of what appears to be the damaged pier built by the U.S. military off Gaza has washed up on shore in Israel. NPR's Kat Lonsdorf reports this is the second time it's happened.
Videos posted to social media show crowds of beachgoers playing in the waves in the Saturday afternoon heat as a large piece of debris sits on the sand. The Tel Aviv municipal government confirmed to NPR that the debris was from the U.S. pier off the coast of Gaza. Workers later came to remove it. U.S. Central Command denies the debris was part of the pier. The U.S. pier, which cost around $230 million, has done little to alleviate the desperate need for aid in Gaza since it began operations in mid-May. Rough seas took the pier out of commission for several weeks, although U.S. officials say it's now back up and running. But it's doing so at well below promised levels, and what aid it has delivered recently is stuck in a holding yard waiting for distribution. Kat Lonsdorf, NPR News, Tel Aviv.
Stocks open higher this morning as European regulators accuse Apple of anti-competitive behavior. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average rose about 250 points in early trading.
EU regulators say Apple has violated the trading bloc's new rulebook for digital competition. Apple's accused of making it harder for app developers to steer customers away from the company's app store towards cheaper alternatives. Apple insists it complies with the law. Sportswear maker Under Armour has agreed to pay $434 million to settle claims it tried to hide falling sales from investors. Under Armour denies any wrongdoing. A new federal rule says railroads have to report details of any hazardous cargo immediately when there's a train derailment. Firefighters in East Palestine, Ohio, say when a Norfolk Southern train crashed there last year, it took them 45 minutes to learn what the train was carrying. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
And you're listening to NPR News from Washington. Anti-tobacco groups are criticizing last week's decision by the Food and Drug Administration to authorize four menthol vaping products. From member station WUWM, Chuck Kornbach reports on yesterday's mock funeral at a church in Milwaukee, held in response to the FDA's decision.
And so I'm here to dance on your grave today. Amen.
That's Carol Magruder of the African American Tobacco Leadership Council. The California-based activist joined Milwaukee religious leaders at a symbolic funeral for Newport menthol cigarettes, which health advocates say have been disproportionately marketed to black communities and should be part of a delayed ban on menthol-flavored tobacco. Magruder says the FDA last Friday should not have okayed the use of four menthol vaping products.
It's another bad move. It's another bad move, and it's about money.
The FDA says the allowed vaping products could help adult smokers switch from traditional cigarettes to less harmful e-cigarettes. For NPR News, I'm Chuck Quernbach in Milwaukee.
Today is the second anniversary of the U.S. Supreme Court opinion overturning the Roe decision and the federal right to abortion. Former President Donald Trump says he has helped move abortion from the federal level to the state level. Vice President Harris will campaign on abortion rights today. Separately, the Supreme Court has agreed today to hear a case on whether states can ban gender-affirming medical care for transgender children. The case will be heard next term. It's from Tennessee. I'm Corva Coleman, NPR News.
Support for NPR and the Tiny Desk Contest comes from Capital One, offering their premium travel card, Venture X. Capital One is proud to support NPR Music and the Tiny Desk Contest. Capital One, what's in your wallet? And the listeners who support this NPR station.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. It's Monday, and that's when we check in with our own local author and economist, James B. Huntington, for Work Shift Live to give us a take on what's going on in the economy. James B., good morning.
Good morning, Tim. Good morning, listeners.
And James B., one of the things we're leading off with today is, I'm kind of confused by this, but you're going to explain to us why paying cash might cost extra. I know that when I go into an establishment and sometimes they say there's going to be a surcharge if I pay by credit, that they're trying to make up what they're being charged by a credit company. But how is it that cash might cost consumers extra?
Yes, just as we're getting used to dealing with those credit card surcharges, we're finding out that it's possible to have to pay extra if you tender cash. And that is places that don't take cash, especially in baseball parks. Most major league parks right now will not take cash. So what they have there that you can use is a reverse ATM. That is a machine you put cash into, and it gives you a card, a cash card, in effect, with a balance on it, minus their service charge. So in the example they have here in this article in the Wall Street Journal was somebody putting $200 into one of these machines and getting back $196.50 value for their thing. But it's annoying a lot of people, and New York State, for one thing, has laws pending. They have already banned cashless businesses, so they're going to start requiring, they may start requiring, if a bill they wrote up becomes law, requiring that places that don't take cash or for some reason, if that's legal, I think there are some set-asides like the baseball parks, having one of these reverse ATMs, so you'll do that. So watch out for, watch out for this strange thing, but it is quite possible.
Wow, that is a result, I guess, of like the increase in technology, people's habits changing, not carrying cash as much. But then, why should you be penalized for that? All right, we'll keep an eye out. What else is happening with new home construction?
Yes, well, it's slowing. They're building fewer houses than before. It's housing starts are down 5.5% last month, which is because, in large part, people are not buying them because interest rates have pushed mortgages higher. We have a lot of people who are not moving when they might otherwise do that in order to keep the mortgages they have. It's cheaper, it's proportionally more expensive for them to buy a new house of some sort. But yes, we may have improvements as interest rates go down, if they go down. We have no idea, but for now, it's one of the weakest times. It's housing prices have reached all-time highs lately, and it may not change. Supply of them is considerably down. So it's going to be a matter of supply and demand in large extent because there are not as many of them, and prices will be forced higher for that.
Yeah, so that's new construction, but the housing market overall is sort of, I don't know another way to say it besides weird.
Yes, the New York Times had a piece that describes it. One of their chief economists described it as weird and ugly. And what he has here, the points he's making for is that first, the one I just said, it's hard to find a house to buy. The supply of them, the number of them around, it's about 1.3 million right now. Well, 1985, even when the country was considerably smaller, there were almost 2 million. And around 2008, right before the recession hit there, in fact, it was over 3 million. So it's been dropping really steadily, fairly steadily, since 2008. Now they're just not many. Second, the author describes them as unaffordable because the income needed to buy them, which was fairly high in 2005 to 2008, dropped down a considerable amount from 2010 and then started going up slowly, gradually, 2010. And then, or 2020 rather, and then as the pandemic hit, the income needed to buy them proportionally has gone up a lot. So right now, in order to buy a median value house with 10% down, a normal sort of thing, you need a family income of about $115,000. So that is one of the highest we've seen in decades. Third, there is new construction going on. It is helping. It is making a difference. So it's probably a good time to consider a new built house if you're looking for one, because it may be a relative bargain. And fourth, there's no escape with renting because they're going up quite a bit also. That leases are tending often to go up 5% or so a year, which is more than inflation. And so there may be better deals locally here and there, but from what I've heard about our listening area is remarkably expensive given income levels to find a place to rent.
Yeah, that is an issue, affordable housing. But I think that is an apt way of describing this market. It's weird and ugly. Another article that caught your eye, and I know this isn't you, but the headline is, "It's fine if investing bores you. Some money pros feel the same way." What is it about these money pros and professionals, getting bored by investing?
Well, we're getting something of a change in the industry about their attitudes toward encouraging people to invest. It's with so many opportunities to pay nothing as a fee for stock trades and such, they're not hawking people doing that as much, and they're saying things. Interesting quote, here's one financial planner saying, "I think investing should be boring. We don't want to place too much emphasis on it," and suggesting really that you buy conservative, sober mutual funds or exchange funds. You can buy something, of course. You can buy a chunk of something that will cost you what the Dow Jones average is today, the same amount in dollars, say, and when you sell it, you will sell it for the whatever the Dow is, minus some small, relatively small service charge or something. But those are index funds. These are things that people have been disparaging about in the past, calling people who get these things passive investors. But it's a remarkably hassle-free, and it happens to be my personal choice. I'm really nothing on stock trading because by the time I find out something is hot, it's generally often too late, and I'd rather buy the things that have gone up more than inflation, more than other things have, for decades. without having to second guess myself or wonder what's going on. Because, I mean, I've long thought personally, this is personal, that investment advisors really don't know anything. Often they're fighting the last war. They're going on principles that don't hold. They're completely missing things. There certainly was no outrush of people saying you should buy NVIDIA and other artificial intelligence stocks 2 years ago. And by a year and a half ago, it was almost too late. It's still going up, but there are awfully good reasons in that case why you'd be better off selling than buying.
But,
it's fine if this is boring and you take a passive approach, because that actually may be the best for your wallet as well as your sanity.
Yeah, I mean, dullness may be the healthiest way to think about money management, whether you're managing your finances or someone else you work with feels the same way.
So if you're not jumping around looking for stocks to buy and analyzing things and so on, there's nothing wrong with that. Just buy and hold good stuff.
Think long term. All right. Well, let's jump to the numbers, though, and see how things are doing. Where did things end up this morning and last week?
Yes. Here's our short term on some things here. Based on a week ago, gold, $23.28 early this morning, up $6. Didn't do much this week. Silver, $29.63, up 45 cents. The ratio there is about 78.5 to 1. The markets really don't know what the ratio between gold and silver should be, but it is the key thing. If you see it, for some reason, gold jumps way up and 70, well, that if you're interested in buying something, then silver might be a good choice. If it goes to 85, then, I've got it backwards there. Yes, if gold is higher, if gold is lower proportionally, then buy gold. But if that ratio goes up, then think about buying silver if you've had a hankering to do that. Dow Jones Industrial Average, 39,150 plus 561. I think it's strolling back to 40,000. This was a good week, but not really spectacular. It was just good. NASDAQ, 17,689. It broke even exactly. That is possible. I've seen it do that day to day, but week to week, it's even rarer. Nothing. Oil, West Texas Intermediate, 80.97 plus 229. Disappointing to see it going up, but we are coming up on summer driving season, where in this country and a lot of others in the Northern Hemisphere, people are buying more, pushing demand up. Bitcoin, 62,488, down almost 3,700, still in the 60s, still wandering around the 60s. I don't know if it means anything. I don't think it does. British pound, $1.2667. That one broke even exactly also. Not much action, really, in these European currencies. The euro is 1.0724, up 11 hundredths of a cent, really just happenstance. Japanese 100 yen is still at its lowest level in decades at 63 cents. So this was a dull week, except for the Dow, Bitcoin, and oil, and not much seems to be happening long term, but there is a lot of money out there which has to be put somewhere.
All right, we'll keep it dull. We'll keep it steady. That's James B. Huntington, local author and economist, who joins us every Monday with his local economic, every Monday with every local economic perspective, and on money too. James B., thank you so much.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you, listeners.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, spotlight on SUNY Sullivan. This is Radio Chatskill.
This week on the Retro Cocktail Hour, we're ready to sweep you off to a tropical island with tunes by Ixtahuela, Tiki Paradise, and the Hawaii Calls Orchestra. I'm Daryl Brogdon. Pack up some sunscreen and join me, where the music's shaken, not stirred. The Retro Cocktail Hour. Wednesday night at 7, here on Radio Catskill.
I'm Stephen Dubner. On the next Freakonomics Radio, there is a new hit show on Broadway called Stereophonic.
It's not a very fashionable play. It doesn't have to do with identity politics.
It is an unusual show and unusually good. We talked to the creators and producers of Stereophonic about what its success might mean for the future of live theater. That's next time on Freakonomics Radio. Tuesday at 1 p.m. on Radio Catskill.
Welcome back to Radio Catskill. You can be among the first to welcome SUNY Sullivan's new president, Dr. David Potash, to campus on Saturday, plus an opportunity to meet special guests, award-winning veteran PBS frontline journalists and filmmakers Martin Smith and Marcella Gaviria. Here to tell us more about the Spotlight on SUNY Sullivan event is Dan Rigney from
Good morning,
SUNY Sullivan.
Tim.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for coming over.
We're incredibly excited.
Yeah.
You know, David is, you know, we're so close to having David here and arriving. He's, you know, it's been such a period of transition at the college, and to be able to give him a real solid welcome from the community, and also to introduce David to some of the people who are here in the community that are so important, not just to SUNY, not just to SUNY Sullivan and Sullivan County, but also to the world itself.
Which is why you're doing this event, to welcome him to the community. For folks who may not recall, we've covered this before, but Dr. David Potash is a new president coming in just this next month. And he's from outside the area, but has roots in the New York State. Can you tell us a little bit more about
David,
Dr. Potash?
David has been running a Wilbur Wright Community College in Chicago, a part of the city of Chicago's community college system. There's actually five colleges in the city of Chicago that are community colleges. But he does come from originally the northern New Jersey area, and his family actually was involved with some of the horse breeding in Orange County as well. So he definitely knows the region pretty well, and his wife is also from the Lower East Side. So it's there for them. This is kind of a homecoming for them. And so this opportunity to run SUNY Sullivan is for David an opportunity for him to work close to family, but also to start something new on his own.
When he officially starts in July, is that right?
He officially starts July 1st, but he has been chomping at the bit.
Yeah.
He has just, my understanding is that he's just bought a house in Sullivan County and is getting ready to move. So it's a busy week for him in many, many ways.
So a great welcome with this event.
Yeah.
You have, as I mentioned, PBS frontline journalists Martin Smith and Marcella Gaviria. Tell us a little bit about them and what they're going to be doing at the event as well.
Well, we're thrilled about that because Marcella and Martin have been so important at PBS in the work that they've done internationally in the Middle East, nationally for their investigative work, and particularly in higher education. They did a piece called College Inc. about 2009 and then followed up with it about 4 years later that really investigated the state of higher education in the United States and particularly the impact of the growth of the for-profit college industry on the price of education. It was a very eye-opening moment in the way of looking at education here in the United States. And with David coming to town, it was an opportunity to have them talk about the current state of higher education, how a community college fits into that, and then also kind of update us on what they've seen happening with the story that they've been following for these years.
Yeah, I mean, they have offices here in Sullivan County,
yes,
where they still produce for PBS Frontline. Mm-hmm. So it's not just local people in the area who have a boldface name. There's a connection here with this higher education subject matter. What are they going to be talking about? Is it a forum, a workshop? How's the format?
So we are still putting the format together, but my understanding is that David will come out, say a few words of greeting. He'll be introduced to the audience. There's a couple of people he'll want to introduce, including our new director of workforce development, Jamie Schmeiser. And we think we might have a student or two to have a good story to talk about. And then he'll be joined by Martin and Marcella, who'll give you some clips from some of their previous work. And then there'll be a conversation with them that'll be moderated by the wonderful Ulton Guilfoyle, who is himself a wonderful media person, a personality, personality in bold letters.
Well, he has many, many adjectives. Filmmaker, curator, author.
He's the man who brought motorcycles to the Guggenheim. So, and then as a special treat at the end, I believe Martin and Marcella have a new piece that they're working on that they're going to give us a preview of as a kind of a work in progress.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
So this is to benefit SUNY Sullivan Foundation.
Correct.
People are aware of SUNY Sullivan, our local college here, but SUNY Sullivan Foundation, people may not be as familiar with. Can you describe some of the missions and some of the things you guys do for the foundation?
So the community college is actually a government agency. Technically, I'm a county employee. And it's a, you know, it's a SUNY system. And so as a government agency, it is supported by, in the case of community colleges, county, state, and federal funding. There is also created a 501c3, as they say, not-for-profit organization. Basically, we're sort of friends of SUNY Sullivan that can go out and do the private fundraising for them. And with this event, so that's why there's a ticket price. We also have a silent auction, and we've been leaning into the great creations and destinations of Sullivan County for that as a way of welcoming David. We're showing him what's here. I've been talking to a lot of great municipal organizations, like from Narrowsburg, Barryville, Hurleyville, Parksville, all the ones who are excited. They've gathered people, they've gathered their businesses together and basically created baskets to show you why it's important to visit Narrowsburg. Why is it important to visit Barryville and Hurleyville and so forth? So it's a kind of a welcome wagon.
This is, you mentioned, you know, a period of transition for the college. Yep. You know, recently there were some of the courses that were discontinued. So
deactivated.
And so this is a change and a shift in leadership as well. Have you heard from Dr. Potash about some of his vision yet, or is he planning to outline any of that at this event, or do you know when he might be able to tell us more?
I think you're going to hear a bit from David at the event itself as to what he's thinking. But David is also I have found David to be very intelligent in the way that he listens to people. Anyone who meets him, and I think particularly if you come to this event and see him, he will work the room in a way that's not glad-handing. It's more of, let's have a conversation. Let's get that conversation started. Let's find out before we start to put new shapes on top of things.
Some of the proceeds from the event go to benefit the foundation, which supports students and faculty. What are some of the things that you do to support them? Is this like the scholarship program, or how does this work?
Actually, it's quite a number of things. It's to support the scholarships. There are people who have given us the responsibility of carrying their legacy out to support student work. We also have particular funds that support different programs like the Hospitality Institute and nursing. But also just in general to support the college itself, give us that extra bump that we can do to enhance what the government gives us to basically serve Sullivan County and the region that much better. And particularly the focus of what's coming in here, we're looking at trying to create new opportunities for adult students, students who are between maybe 20 and 28. Maybe they graduated high school, maybe they didn't graduate high school. But they want to improve their lives and they want to build themselves up. Also, local businesses want to train up their employees, get them to increase their capacity and also affect the capacity of Sullivan County to grow.
Yeah, not just keeping students who are graduating high school here in the county with an opportunity, but then people who are already here with continuing education.
Absolutely. It's all, we're here to, community is our first name. So we are here to support Sullivan County's community. We also rely on the community to support us. And the more there's a conversation between the two, the better it is for all.
All right, let's remind folks where they can get more information about Spotlight on SUNY Sullivan.
Go to sunysullivan.edu. You will see the Spotlight link there. You can purchase your tickets there. You can make a donation. And we also have a special thing that we've been starting so that we're doing this in the C-League Theater. There's a 230-plus seat theater that we have there. We have a Take a Seat campaign where that if you can't come to this event, you can buy a plaque that will be put on the back of a seat, and you actually can choose your exact seat that you want, and you can support the college that way.
Cool. Dan Rigney with a Spotlight on SUNY Sullivan coming up this Saturday. Again, there's more information at sunysullivan.edu/spotlight.
Come on out, folks. We'd love to see you there and give David a great big warm Sullivan County welcome.
Thank you. We'll take a break, and when we come back, a farewell to Albany Bureau Chief Karen DeWitt from the New York Public News Network. This is Radio Catskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Farm Arts Collective, located on Willow Wisp Organic Farm in Damascus, Pennsylvania. Farm Arts Collective's programs intersect the practices of farming, performance, food, and ecology. FarmArtsCollective.org. From the Community Foundation of Orange and Sullivan, a publicly supported philanthropic institution, CFOSNY.org. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
I'm Maria Hinojosa this week on Latino USA. As immigration and the border take center stage in this campaign season, we're going to take you to Sasabe, Mexico, a town in the shadows of the border wall where the locals have been forced to flee because of cartel violence.
We are in a war. There is gunshots all over these mountains. We don't know what's happening.
This week on Latino USA.
Thursday afternoon at 1 on Radio Catskill.
People talk about polarization, but did you know most of us are in the hopeful majority, tired of political divisions and looking for a way out? That's why Radio Catskill and StoryCorps invite you to have a conversation with someone different and not so different than you. It's one small step where strangers get to know each other as people. Help bridge the divide, one conversation at a time. Sign up at WJFFradio.org.
StoryCorps' One Small Step and the radio station helps are made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Welcome back to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Karen DeWitt is the Albany Bureau Chief for the New York Public News Network. You've heard her reporting here on Radio Catskill. She retired on Friday, and that's after a long and distinguished career in public radio. Her time in Albany spanned six governors and more than a dozen legislatures. Much has changed across the media landscape since DeWitt arrived at the state capitol in 1990. From the New York Public News Network, Ian Pickus has a special farewell exit interview with Karen DeWitt.
This is Ian Pickus for WAMC News. Pretty soon, Karen DeWitt's reporting career will belong to the history she's been chronicling for more than three decades.
Legislators, aides, lobbyists, and reporters huddled around TV screens all over the Capitol to listen to Governor Spitzer's announcement of resignation.
Because we have a personal friendship.
Well, you think he deserves a second chance?
The first witnesses included well-known Albany lobbyist James Featherstone and the former head of an investment firm for which the senator is accused of hiding his role to solicit pension investments from unions.
The longtime public radio Capitol correspondent is retiring after a career in which she interviewed six governors, scores of lawmakers, and advocates for just about every issue under debate in Albany. On June 3rd, the current governor, Democrat Kathy Hochul, attended Karen's retirement party at WAMC's The Linda, where Karen was also honored with a legislative proclamation. And while I know she definitely doesn't love being the center of attention like this, Karen is here with us now for an exit interview. Congratulations, Karen.
Well, thanks, Ian, and I will get the public attention for you.
We've talked so many times over the years about budgets and late budgets and elections and so on. And there's a real rhythm to the year in Albany. So as you're preparing to say goodbye, do you think you'll miss that part of it?
Yeah, I do think that I will. And as you know, Ian, and any reporter will tell you, without a deadline, we don't know what to do with ourselves and how to structure our day, because I've been so beholden to the daily deadline. And sometimes even after the deadline into the evenings for so many years, I think, oh, my God, can I really structure my life without having that pressure? Yeah, it was really kind of hitting me last Friday that it's my final last day of session. It's fun to be part of something that's dynamic. I mean, the Capitol for a while has been something of an anachronism, whereas you have to interact with real people in real time. I mean, who does that anymore? And that's been a real privilege. But there's a lot of good young reporters who are at the Capitol right now who are going to do a good job and, you know, really fill in any gaps that might temporarily happen from me not being there.
So how did you get started reporting on the Capitol all those years ago?
It was one of those things, you know, if you can't go in the front door, you go in the back door. I started off after college at SUNY Geneseo working in local radio around the Capital Region. There was even an all-news radio station at one point. It was kind of a precursor to what you see on Spectrum News now. And that was great training ground because we were all young reporters. We ran out, covered everything. We're live on the air. And it was really cool and really fun. But I always liked politics more than covering fires. And the state capitol was very exciting in those days in the 1980s. Mario Cuomo was governor. He was a national figure. You had New York City Mayor Ed Koch, who would come around to Albany now and then. All these larger-than-life people walking the halls of the capitol. And so I found a back door in. A stringer position opened for 1010 Winds, the really great all-news radio station in New York City. And I managed to get that job and then filled in the rest with magazine articles. I worked for the news weekly Metroland. Some people might remember Metroland. Also worked for Adirondack Life and kind of patched it all together until in 1990, this public radio job became available. It was just a 2-year-old bureau and just getting started up.
And nowadays, a lot of different stations across New York all share your reporting. When you started to have like a statewide perch, how did that influence the way you went about the job?
Well, it was trying to find a perspective that would appeal to all the stations from the North Country to Western New York to Long Island. It's always been a little easier at WAMC because in this area, we're really tuned in to the Capitol. So any news that's coming out about the politicians or the Capitol is of interest to people. But yeah, it was a challenge because a lot of times New York City news dominates, you know, the whole dynamic, the whole session. We're seeing that right now with this big, you know, fight over congestion pricing and Hochul's kind of shocking reversal over that. So that's always been a bit of a tough balance, but I would try to find something that would appeal to everyone, mostly to be honest, Ian, because if I ran and did, okay, the Rochester mayor speaking, the Buffalo mayor speaking, this is happening in Binghamton as one person, I never could have done all of that anyway.
You said in your retirement remarks at that party on June 3rd that you were gratified to finally see a female governor elected in 2022. And a lot of the tributes to your career have pointed out your role as a trailblazer within that Legislative Correspondents Association. So both in terms of the reporting, but also in terms of the makeup of the state government and the legislature, what do you think about the gender balance now that you're at the end of it in 2024?
Right. And, you know, I never really thought of myself as a trailblazer. I just kind of, you know, went to work every day and tried to do my best. But it's true. It is very different than when I started. It really was a man's world. You know, the phrase three men in a room, the governor and the two legislative leaders would hash out the budget, all the end of session details. Well, now it's two women, female governor, female leader of the Senate, Andrea Stewart Cousins, and one man, Speaker Carl Hastie, in a room. And it's a big difference. I mean, I think women aren't treated equally. They're treated a bit different still. But I think it's a big change that almost seems like it's not an issue anymore, certainly not the way it was, you know, a few decades ago. That's a good thing. I'm very happy that I got to witness that.
So there's no question that it's a challenging time for the news media and for, you know, public outlets like the ones that you've been filing for all these years. What do you think about the state of journalism now that you're preparing to leave this role?
Well, you know, I hate to be negative, but oh, that's the role of a reporter anyway, right? No, just kidding. But, you know, there's a lot of concerns about where the media is going right now, public trust in the media. A lot of it is that we have less access to the top politicians. You know, Governor Hochul, she definitely limits her availabilities. We have the Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie, who I mentioned. We're no longer allowed in the back of the Assembly chamber anymore, which might not seem like a lot. But reporters used to be able to hang out there, see what lobbyists were coming and going, catch the speaker as he was going off to a meeting with his members. And we're just banned from there. And it just it makes a difference because you don't really have your finger on the pulse of what's going on. But all of the politicians now, they have their own social media feeds, their YouTube channels. So they don't really need us and they can bypass any scrutiny or pesky questions that reporters might ask. The other thing that's a concern is, you know, everyone has their own set of facts these days, and even a trusted media source like us, like NPR, you're just not readily believed in the same way that you were, even though, like, we're reporting facts. It's all much more fragmentary, and we're in the midst of a really big change. I'm sorry I'm leaving to make the rest of you deal with it, but it's really hard to know what's next with journalism. I mean, I hope the core values stay in some form in the future.
If I may say, I think part of the reason that you've been celebrated so universally right now, and it's all well deserved, is that we don't see a lot of people getting to finish their career in the Capitol reporting offices. They do it for a couple of years in their 20s and they get out and they become lobbyists or they work in PR or they join a government office. And it's pretty rare to see somebody finishing up nowadays. So what advice do you have for people who might just be starting out on this path?
Yeah, and nothing against lobbyists or spokespeople for politicians. If that's your calling, that's great. I'm super grateful I didn't have to do that. I do not have the personality to, you know, sell things in that way or work for other people in the way you need to. I think my advice to young reporters has been the same as, you know, what the case was with me. If you want to do journalism, you have to want to do it more than anything else in the world. Otherwise, it's going to be too hard and you're going to end up with a different job. I think now if you're starting out as a journalist, you know that you're going to have several jobs. You're not going to stay 34 years like I was lucky enough to do. But I would say use those changing jobs to keep upping your salary. I mean, use it to your advantage. And also, you know, as I said, I'm grateful I didn't have to be a lobbyist or a spokesperson, but I think it's more acceptable now to move in and out of what we used to call the dark side. You know, you can go to PR, you could be a spokesperson for a politician, and you can come back. So you might need to structure a career where you sort of go in and out of journalism, you know, when as you find your different opportunities and just, you know, find your angle, a way to get in, what kind of reporting you want to do. And, you know, like I said, I got in the back door to this job of public radio. And so, if the front door is not open, try the back door. There's always a way.
So we're speaking just after this legislative session ended. And as always, a lot of the big bills were left on the table. You know, there's things that stick around year after year. We heard some of your career highlights earlier, and people will obviously remember the resignations and the really late budgets and some of the wars that we saw between the Senate leader, Joe Bruno, and Speaker Silver. But what are some things that stick out to you as you're looking back that aren't necessarily the huge headline grabbers, but were really important moments during your time on the beat?
I think some of those were some of the long-term fights for legislation, for rights, for different groups of people. I particularly loved seeing that. The disability rights movement, the mental health rights movement, the gay marriage movement that led to the dramatic, you know, passage of same-sex marriage in New York State in 2011. So it was sort of those more of those slow moving dramas where you see incremental progress and, you know, just kind of see hopefully the world changing in some way for the better. And I think those are the moments I enjoy the most.
Okay. It's next, let's say March 30th, 31st, April 1st, April 2nd, April 3rd, whatever. And we don't have a budget yet. Where are you? What are you doing next early spring?
Actually, I do know what I'm doing, and this is part of why I decided this was the year to retire. I'm actually taking a Viking River cruise from Budapest, ending up in Germany, and then going to Prague. So, you know, you can think of that when you're slogging through the late budget, which will probably be later than ever next year, is my prediction.
Karen, I said this to you when you and I were speaking about your retirement, not for broadcast, and I'm going to repeat it now. You'll always have a perch here at WAMC. We are so thankful and grateful to you on your long run and everything you've meant to our listeners. So congrats. It's well deserved. We're sorry to see you go.
Well, thank you very much. And I do hope I have a little bit of an extra chapter left in me. And you've been great, Ian, through the years. Absolutely great to work with.
So, Capitol correspondent Karen DeWitt speaking with WAMC's Ian Pickus. Karen reports from Albany for the New York Public News Network. Her last day in a 34-year public radio reporting career was Friday, and we wish her the best of luck. And I want to go on that Viking cruise with her. Not to worry, we'll still bring you reporting from Albany from the New York Public News Network right here. We'll take a break, and when we come back, the Cragsmoor Stone Church and the Hilltop Experience. Music from West Africa. We'll tell you more after this.
Last year, over 100,000 people died from drug overdoses driven by fentanyl. And the fastest growing group is under 19. Fentanyl is the number one cause of overdose in Sullivan County. Whether you're a parent or an educator, you can have the right conversation now to potentially save a kid's life. Protect kids from the dangers of fentanyl. More information and resources at naturalhigh.org. Paid for by Catholic Charities of Orange, Sullivan, and Ulster.
I'm Tanya Mosley.
And I'm Juana Summers. We've got your back when it comes to reporting the news. And one of the things this station counts on to keep it all going, contributions.
Including that vehicle you no longer need. Donate it. Help us bring you the news you count on. Learn more by visiting this station's website. And thanks.
Donate your car, boat, or motorcycle at WJFFradio.org.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The Cragsmoor Stone Church was built in 1897 with breathtaking views of the Catskill Mountains. Famous for its stone architecture and stained glass, the church also boasts cathedral-like acoustics and has therefore hosted numerous music events through the years. Coming up July 6th, the Cragsmoor Stone Church hosts the Hilltop Experience with West African balafonist Famaro Diabate and his trio. Here's culture reporter Valerie Manzi with more.
Good morning, Ezra and Famaro, and welcome to Radio Chatskill. And
good morning.
We're here to talk about the Hilltop Experience coming up on July 6th at 7 p.m., and it is a series of summer concerts at the Cragsmoor Stonehouse Church. And you have a really interesting opening production. And you can you tell us about it?
Yeah, it's Famaro Diabate, who's here with us. And he is an incredible balafon player from Guinea in West Africa, who I've had the good fortune, the luck really, to have played music with over the last, I don't know, 10 or out of something years in New York City, where he lives now.
For those of us who don't know, what is a balafon?
So a balafon, it's sometimes called the African xylophone. It's similar instrument to the xylophone built out of wood. And he, so the music he plays comes from Guinea, West Africa, really incredible style of when we play in the city. When I've played with him, it's a dance band, electric dance band party, and everyone's dancing and having a good time. But it's all he also his, the range of his music and what I've heard him do in so many different settings is really incredible. So what he's doing for the Stone Church concert on the 6th is more of an acoustic, maybe more traditional setting with other only three other musicians from all from Guinea. And it's going to be just a really incredible look at the traditional music from this part of the world. So I'm so excited to be making it happen.
Oh, yes. Sounds wonderful. And Famaro, can you tell us about yourself and your work and the balafon?
Okay. Thank you. Hi, everyone. My name is like Famaro Diabate. I am come from West Africa, Guinea-Conakry, because, you know, I can say Guinea-Conakry. We have three Guinea in Africa, Guinea-Conakry. So, yeah. So I am Jali. Jali, that's my language, neuro-language in Mandingo. And like in French, they say griot.
Yes.
And I think in English, like living history book in Manding society,
West Africa. And we call that galley, griot.
Griot, okay. A storyteller, keeper of history.
Exactly, storyteller. And I'm come from that family. We hold the story generation to generation. So, and I'm bala from player. The instrument we call in Africa bala, B-A-L-A, bala. So, like we use like a French colony. So, from the French people make phone, like telephone, bala phone.
Yes.
Bala phone. So, in English, I think xylophone.
Okay.
Yeah. And in Latin, they say marimba.
Oh, really?
Yeah, marimba. So that's bala. It's the grandfather. Like we get this bala from 1235.
1235?
From the year 1235.
Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. And then the first bala come from 1235 still in Africa. We play one a year. And then it's in Guinea, between Mali and Guinea. But particularly in Guinea, the place called Nyagasura, the first bala still there. So I am da bala player.
What will this evening be composed of? What are you planning?
My planning, I'm waiting for July 6th.
Yes.
I'm getting ready for that to be sharing good life with people in church that day.
Yes.
And I have a bunch of things, you know, I'm preparing a lot of things, but, you know, this is, you know, really important for me now to come maybe one day because being an Erdra, we have, another band, like electric band called Akakande. So maybe one day we might show up with a whole group. But this time, you know, I'm going to bring bring the best. Yeah, I want to bring, you know, beautiful music for them in July 6th, inshallah. So that's all.
Okay. Well, that sounds wonderful. Just before we end here, tell us a little about your band. Do you play the same instruments in your band? What other instruments are there?
I use the same instrument in the band, but we have different instruments. We have bass, trumpet, guitar, cello, you know, djembe, you know. We have a bunch of different instruments.
Go ahead.
One of the things I'm looking forward to the most is that's the band Kakande, which is the electric version of what Fomoro does. That plays a lot of times in the city at the Shrine nightclub in Harlem, which is run by some guys from Burkina Faso and really great crowd and everything. But for the Stone Church concert, he's bringing a more of an acoustic set of a player who plays Ngoni, which is also called an African banjo. It's like a stringed instrument. And then someone playing talking drum and another singer. So it's going to be a really different style of what he can do and bring. I'm so excited just to hear it, you know, and then to present the concert also is going to be exciting also. So,
well, and it's such really an education in music for the audience as well.
Right.
Yes. I mean,
it is.
Well, it sounds like a wonderful event. And is there anything you would like to add before we conclude?
This is part of, we're putting on three concerts this summer. Fomoro's on July 6th. We have the Antlers on August 17th, which is more of an indie rock, really amazing band that's going to do an acoustic set. And then we have Trina Basu and Arun Rama Murthy, who are an Indian violin duo who come from the Brooklyn Raga Massive, a big collective of Indian musicians in the city. So this is all part of really trying to take advantage of the
amazing diversity in music and just the art that's available to us in this area that a lot of it is based in New York City, but this is so close. And so we're trying to bring some of that up here and present it in a way that really, like you said, educates people, but also just gives such a great experience for everybody.
Yes, and I applaud you for doing this. That is wonderful to be able to bring something from New York, which has so, so much up here. It is a gift to the community, and I think it's wonderful that you're doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we have many things up here, but, you know, it's even better taking advantage of what's available right next door to us in New York City. So.
Okay. All righty. Well, thank you so much for your time. And just, yeah, Ezra, could you just tell our audience when and where?
So it's Famoro Giubbate and his trio at the Stone Church in Cragsmore, New York, and it's Saturday, July 6th at 7 p.m. Tickets are $20. You can get them at the door. You can also reserve ahead of time, which is probably a good idea. At the website is called experiencethehilltop.com. So that's one way to get tickets, but you can also just show up. So Saturday, July 6th.
Okay. Thank you, Ezra, and thank you, Famoro.
Thank you.
And thanks to culture reporter Valerie Manzi. That's all for this edition of Radio Chatskill. But before we go, we've been telling you about One Small Step, the partnership with StoryCorps, where we pair folks with differing beliefs to have a meaningful conversation. We wanted to give you an example of one of those again. This is Dean and Mary from Grand Marais, Minnesota, who participated in One Small Step recently. And this gives you an idea of what it's like, what these conversations are all about.
I call myself conservative first before I would call myself a Republican. I believe that what you work for, you should be able to keep and then do the right thing with your money on your own.
Sometimes people don't have the ability to make their own way. In 1984, I was a mom with a couple of kids at home, and my then husband had to go to the work farm for a while. Mm. And if it wasn't for the government that gave me money to buy food for my children, I don't know if the community would have done that for me.
I know, I understand, because in 2002, I was in a truck accident. I had to get jaws of life to get me out of the truck, and it was a bad, very bad accident, and consequently, the bills.
Yeah.
So I'm talking to the gal at St. Mary's, and she said, well, we're going to sign you up for this program. And I told her, I said, I'm not the type of person that wants to take government handout. Mm-hmm. She said, you need help. Generally, people are good and they want to do the right thing.
Yeah.
I think that's the general premise with all of us. You know, we are like really in a kind of a divisive period in time. And I always think that we can accomplish more by being friends and working together.
Right. For the good of the place we call home and for those coming after us.
Well said.
So there you are. From the other side of the table, we're saying the same thing.
The Radio Catskill and StoryCorps invite you to take a part in One Small Step. It's an effort to bring our communities together, one conversation at a time. Just go to our website, wjffradio.org, and learn more. You can hear more and hear more conversations, and also fill out the questionnaire to sign up and take part. wjffradio.org. That's all for this edition of Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Jeff Works Office Solutions, located right on Main Street in Jeffersonville, New York. A newly renovated pet-friendly office space that rents by the day, week, or month, with hot desks, sound-insulated rooms, Wi-Fi, modern amenities, and 24-hour secure access. Online at jeffworksjayville.com. And from The Cooperage Project, thecooperageproject.org. And listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org.
I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, independent grassroots global news. Our reporting includes breaking daily news headlines and in-depth interviews with people on the front lines of the world's most pressing issues. People speaking for themselves, providing unique and sometimes provocative perspectives on global events. Democracy Now!, weekdays at noon, right here on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming live at WJFFradio.org. It's local news, culture, and NPR. You're listening to Radio Catskill. Today's weather, breezy and cooler, if you haven't noticed already. There might still be a passing morning shower or two. Then times of sun and clouds, much lower humidity, high only in the upper 60s. Tonight, mainly clear, low 57. Back up to 84 tomorrow, sunny, warmer, but thunderstorms, some heavy Wednesday afternoon through Wednesday evening. Some of those storms could bring hail and damaging winds. It looks like Wednesday's high again around 84. On Point is next. You're listening to Radio Catskill. It's 11 o'clock.